Before you start your next do-it-yourself project, listen to this. You Got This is on the air. You Got This is hosted by ABT Plumbing Electric Heat and Air owner Andrew Twidwell and Rosalie Brown. With a helpful hand, here are Andrew and Rosalie.
Hi, this is Andrew Twidwell, owner of ABT Plumbing Electric Heat and Air. Once again with the show You Got This. It's a show of DIY do's and don'ts. And I'm zooming in with Rosalie Brown, and we're here to talk about DIY do's and don'ts. And we got lots of stuff going on. What's going on with you lately? We didn't even talk about what we were going to talk about for banter, but I did talk about it a little bit.
You did.
Because I do have, because we kind of talked about it a lot. We talked about garage doors last week, and the saga continued.
But first, I have to put pause because are you super caffeinated right now? Because
I need to slow down a little bit.
Whoa. I'm watching you and I'm like, okay, you look normal, but you're like three stories ahead. Slow down, brother.
I did go for a nice 5-mile hike this morning. So I'm a little,
you got yourself wound up. Yeah.
And then we got lost. So I was late to my first meeting this morning by like 15 minutes. So
That's classy.
I had to call and that was really good. Fortunately, they're employees. So yeah, they can't get too mad at me.
What good would it do?
They can't fire me, fortunately.
Right.
I'd be fired a long time ago if I didn't own the business, let's be honest.
I got lost somewhere. And I mean, that doesn't even sound like an adult thing to say, but I know that you were. But
we took this hike along the Mississippi River and we took these trails that we haven't tried before. And we were coming back. We're like, oh, this doesn't look right, but we're going in the right direction. And then we ended up like hitting a dead end and having to backtrack by like a quarter mile or over half a mile. So then we only gave ourselves 15 minutes buffer. So yeah, we lost that 15 minutes.
I mean,
and a little bit.
Look, if this had happened 15 years ago, perhaps, like, would you have been able to hustle back in time? But you know, we talked about this. We're older now. Life is moving at a different speed. You just roll into it, man. Just
exactly
roll into it. Don't exert extra if you don't have to. That's my thing. Is like half. Yeah. When you can, you know, do what you can, right? Do what you got to do. Don't overdo it.
Do the best you can. And I messed up. So yeah, I apologize and move forward. So anyway, I will slow down my conversation pace so everybody can understand what I'm saying. And I'm not just blah, blah, blah.
There is ghost involved though. See, I voted for paranormal.
Poltergeist. Yeah.
Which
is totally possible. I mean, the house is built. We were talking to the neighbor trying to figure out when this house was built. And their house was built in 1892. And this house was not on the property when that house was built. So it was built after that, but it was built just at the turn of the century, just at like 1902 or 1903, something like that. So yeah, it is old. So I'm sure it's haunted. I'm sure people died in here.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, don't get me started. Yeah. We could have a whole show on like paranormal in the Midwest. Yeah. I've got some great experiences coming up. But since I don't have my whiskey flask handy this week, let's see. So you determined that it was not a ghost that was stopping the...
It was not the ghost.
Okay.
It was
what did we figure out?
Well, we figured out that it was probably the light sensors, the beam that shoots across. So it's the safety switch so that if a child or a dog walks through the door, it doesn't shut on them. So we determined that was the issue. So I ordered new safety switches. And then of course, I was going to put them in on Saturday, got the package. And was it safety switches or sensors? No, it was disc brakes for a Honda Civic or something. So I had to send those back. Reorder them. Fortunately, it was faster this time. So I got it in a matter of like 48 hours. So then I go to install them. And in my infinite wisdom, and like we were just talking about earlier about me being jacked up and ready to go, too caffeinated up, I went guns a-blazing and I went and cut the wire to the sensor before turning it off. And it was such a rookie move. I know that whenever you're working on electrical stuff, you need to turn the power off. So I cut the wires. So I'm like, and I did that. And I'm like, huh. And I cut both of them at the same time. And I thought, well, it's probably just a switch. It's probably just, you know, positive going through and running through the switch. So I should be good. So I get everything set up and it doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, darn it. So then I double check the power and it didn't have any power. And then I got some when all else fails, read the instructions, right? So I read the instructions and know it's positive, negative, they go to this thing. They're powered. So I shorted something out. And then I went through the whole rigmarole of trying to figure out if there was a fuse on this device, on this garage door, and for the low voltage or a transformer. And I couldn't find anything on the schematics. I couldn't find anything anywhere. And I searched for hours. This 15-minute project, all of a sudden I'm into it for like 2 hours now. And then finally I'm like, okay, I blew something in. And the only thing that's left is I gotta replace the motherboard. Well, the motherboard's like $60. So I start like, all right, this thing's 10 years old. How much is a whole new unit? So I found a whole new unit in one of the box stores for $159. I'm like, all right, brand new. I won't have to deal with anything else. Comes with new sensors, comes with everything. So I got a brand new garage door opener. Installed that, new sensors, put a new button on, did the whole thing. So yeah, and through the diagnostic, I probably should have done that in the beginning. I probably should have just said, you know, I'm just going to get a whole new unit. Now I know better. You know, if it's 10, 15 years old, I should probably just replace it. So do as I say, don't do as I do. You know, if you're doing this,
it probably would have been easier. It literally took me less time
to install that thing than it was for me to figure out what was wrong with it.
I just want to come back to, like, you literally own a company, ABT Plumbing Electric Heat and Air, and you legitimately cut the cords without turning off the power.
It was low voltage, so I'm like, it doesn't matter.
You
total
are
total rookie move.
Yeah, you
it's
are
not the first time I've done it. I wish I could say it was the first time I've ever done that, but no. I mean, I've got pliers that have like arc, you know, that have holes in them because I've done that before, or I've shorted them out, but on hot wires and, you know, 110. But yeah, so it's, yeah, I learned a valuable lesson once again.
Your DIY journey actually is very entertaining to me because it's like, you know better, but you do what you want to do anyway. So yeah.
And that's almost like, there's almost a bad thing when you know just enough to be dangerous. And sometimes I know just enough to be dangerous and I'll go in without reading the instructions, and which will remind you to turn the power off. And then, yeah, I go in, I blow something up. Yeah.
So directions are the printed sheets that come in something, just so you know. Yeah. So I know sometimes it gets used as like cat litter or like bird cage liner or whatever, but
when all else fails, printed. That's what I refer to. Yeah.
They're printed. And they usually come in
the box.
It
does get better though. I installed the new garage door opener, and just, this is just the motor, right? I didn't install the track or anything like that. I replaced like for like, and this new one like has like a programming scenario that you have to go through. And of course I didn't read that. So I'm like trying to get it to work and it's not working. I disconnect the chain. I reconnect it with the door down thinking that's the problem. And then I read the instructions. It's like, I know, all you gotta do is push this button down and it automatically learns when it's supposed to shut off. And then you push it up and it automatically learns when it's supposed to shut off. And it's like, oh geez, man, I could have saved myself another half an hour right there.
There was an easy button. There literally was an easy button and you didn't take it. It also explains why sometimes when I text you, I don't hear back for a long time. Now I can assume that you've gone down a rabbit hole of DIY and gone the long distance, not the shortcut.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. Sometimes it's cheaper just to hire somebody. And to be honest, if I was to really factor in how much my time is worth, it would probably have been cheaper just to hire somebody.
Agreed. But you know what's cool? So now you have a tenant who's like, they don't know necessarily all the backstory unless you share it or unless they were
watching. Oh, I shared it because I'm an open book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, so, I'm literally telling however many people, or 12 listeners about it right now.
So, right, yeah, I about told the how tenant, inept right? you are at DIY.
Exactly. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I messed up. You know,
that's hilarious.
I literally cut the wires, such total rookie move. She's like, oh, whatever. She's a total sweetheart.
Well, she's probably really happy because the end result is her garage door is now working properly, right?
Yeah, and it'll be fine. I mean, everything's brand new, so it'll be good for another, you know, 15 years.
That's what
at least that component. Yeah.
End result is what we're after here. End result is what we're after. Yeah. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So
sometimes that matters more than anything else. But yeah. Anyway, so that was my journey with this garage door, and that was one of four openers I got to deal with. Okay, so maybe we should talk about the reason why we're here. DIY do's and don'ts. So we were trying to figure out what to do about the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the irony.
Let's do a Q&A.
Yeah. So the irony is that I'm going to be asking the guy who just said to everybody that he basically cut something that had live power to it. Okay.
Yeah. But fortunately, I already went through this questionnaire and highlighted the ones that I'm pretty sure I know the answer on. At least I can fake out. Like, at least I can sound like I know what I'm talking
Look,
about.
I'm going to tell you do. I mean, one of the things I appreciate about you is you always have a way of spinning something. So it's at least entertaining. If the actual accuracy is missing a little bit, you're forgiven because it's entertaining. So So as the producer and co-host of said show, I'm going to ask you some questions, and it's not quite a game show, but I know you'll have answers. So this is,
there's no prizes involved, unfortunately.
No. We just get to keep hanging out together. Okay. So here's my question, and I'm going to say it. I'm praying I say this correctly. I can't do it.
You did it before.
I know, but
try it. Just roll with it. Whatever comes out.
What's an escutcheon?
Escutcheon.
What is it?
So an escutcheon. Yeah. So that is the little flange or the phalange that goes behind the valve or behind the P-trap that covers, it's a beauty cap. It basically covers the hole that was made for the pipe to come through the wall. So it's that little chrome disc that covers, I mean, plumbing, that's what we use it. There's other escutcheons, right, in other trades and other kind of fields, but for plumbing, the escutcheon is, it basically covers the hole that we made to put the pipe through the drywall or plaster, whatever the wall is. So it makes it look pretty.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's just a beauty thing.
Okay. Well, we do like aesthetics here at You Got This.
It's finished trim. It's on, you see that, right? It's on the outside of the wall. Yeah, so they are important. Very important. I've seen many people not use them, and it looks, you know, it shows you know what you're doing.
I've lived in houses that showed everything. So it's a nice step to actually cover up your dirty laundry. Okay, well, here's something that should be easy, and it is a bit like a commercial, but here we are. The show is sponsored by ABT Plumbing, Electric, Heat, and Air. So why should I hire a licensed plumber? What's the difference between a licensed plumber and the guy with the cool sign?
The chuck in the truck.
Yeah, on his truck.
Yeah, handyman. So one of the things that a licensed plumber brings, obviously, is training. I mean, you have to go through a certain amount of education to be able to become a licensed plumber. The second thing, which I think is more important than granted, we should know what we're doing, right? So at least when you're calling a plumbing company a licensed plumber, you know that they know what they're doing. That's kind of a given. But the other things that come with a licensed plumber is you have to be bonded. Bare minimum, you have to be bonded. So if anything happens on the property, there's a $14,000 bond. So they'll take care of it. Unfortunately, $14,000 doesn't really, I think it's 14.5 now, something like that, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I've had to get the bond. Doesn't cover much, right? I mean, a gallon of water can do $14,000 worth of damage if you leave it there long enough.
Yeah.
And then if you got a plumbing leak, you can be pushing out 8 gallons per minute. So hopefully the licensed plumber that you hire has liability insurance. Like, we carry a $2 million liability insurance. So if something occurs, it's covered for up to, I think it's $1 million per incident. So, you know, we're pretty well covered if something happens, you know? So those are the main things, is insurance, but also if you're a licensed contractor, licensed plumber, you have to have workers' comp. So if you have employees that are working for you, they have to have workers' comp. So if they get hurt on the job site, workers' comp takes care of them. If you don't have workers' comp and somebody gets hurt on your property, they can go after your homeowner's insurance. So if Joe Blow comes in and breaks his leg and is out of work for 6 months, he needs to pay his bills. So he's going to go after, try to get the money no matter what he can. And he may actually go after your homeowner's insurance or may sue you to get compensated for his injury on your property. Okay. So, and to be honest, there's nothing you can really do about it except pay it. It's standing law right now. If somebody gets hurt on your property, it's your responsibility unless they're a licensed contractor then has workers' comp. So that's a big one. So it really protects you. Plus, you know, if you hire a legitimate licensed contractor that's been around for a while, like we have over 20 years now, you know, they're going to be there tomorrow or next year to back up any kind of warranties. And, you know, so if something happens, they're going to take care of you. Whereas the check in the truck, you know, he may be spread so thin that he may not be able to take care of it, take care of you. And if he's not licensed, you really don't have a lot of recourse to go after him, except for litigation, which a lot of times is more expensive than the potential rewards you can get. And let's be honest, if he's a truck in a truck and doesn't have a license, he probably doesn't have any assets to get for you to go after anyway. So go for it. Sue him. You're going to get his beat up pickup truck. That's the extent, and maybe his tools. You know, so you maybe get $5,000.
And
you could have done hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage to your property. So.
Possibly you'll get his hound dog as well. But
Okay. Yeah.
So let's talk for just a second about, don't go too deep into this because it will bore people to death. I find it fascinating. But talk to me a little bit about plumbing. I hear plumbing code. I'm using air quotes.
Yeah.
What's plumbing code all about?
So I get a lot of people who are like, yeah, whatever. Just forget about plumbing code or forget about codes. They're just a pitta, right?
Suggestion.
Yeah. They're just a suggestion. Well, plumbing codes are written to protect both property and person. That is the basis for plumbing code. So one of the main things for plumbers is we protect the health and safety of the nation. We make sure that you have clean drinking water. We make sure that there's not a cross contamination between the sewer pipe and the drinking water pipe. We make sure that the gas lines are installed correctly so that we don't blow up the house. Those sort of things. It's to protect property and person. So that's the basis of it. And if you traveled much, you can go to other countries where they don't have said codes and you can't drink the water.
Right.
So, and part of the reason is because they don't have plumbing codes and they have a lot of cross contamination between the dirty water and the clean water.
Yep, got it. So, okay, yeah. Let's put a pin.
That's
on
what
there.
Plumbing codes are for. To protect person and property.
Okay, like that. Okay, so here's a trick question, but I bet you know it. What's the appropriate height for a gas water heater? Is there such a thing, and what is it?
So the appropriate height for a gas water heater, it can be on the ground as long as it's not in a garage. If it's in a garage where you have the potential for gas to leak out of the gas tank and roll out onto the floor, you don't want that standing pilot to ignite the gas and blow up your house.
Okay.
So the code is that pilot light or that burner needs to be 18 inches above the ground. So theoretically, to give you enough buffer between the ground and any vapor that may be rising so it won't ignite it. And typically, so what that means for installation is it's really 14 inches for the bottom of the water heater because there's about 4 inches from the bottom of the water heater to where the ignition point is. So, but even on electric water heater, we've got to put them on stands as well because there's a switch in there that has a potential for arcing and it can ignite the gas. So we put them as well. And we just put them on a gas water heater stand. It's a little higher than it needs to be, but it's above 18 inches.
And that's the goal, right?
The reason why we put them up.
Okay.
Yeah. It's to protect it from, and I've seen stuff like, I literally worked on a house where a furnace ignited a truck, a classic Chevy truck that had a rag in the gas line and it was parked right next to the ignition point and it lit the apartment building on fire.
Oh my God. No. I mean, they have these standards. There's always a reason, right? There's always a tragedy that
is caused. People and property.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. So let's say that I have a leak somewhere in the plumbing and it's in my shower bath, but I can't, like, how do I locate that or what's that about? Or give me some advice.
So I wanted to answer this one because it's interesting to me because we get this call all the time. My tub is leaking. Can you figure out what the problem is? Ironically, I want to say 90%, but it's probably closer to like 75% of the time. It's not actually a plumbing issue. It's a tile issue. It's where the tub and tile connect and that little caulk line gets, you know, eventually it breaks open and water will leak underneath and go over the rise of the little lip inside on the tub and leak in the wall. So I usually tell people if I get that call, if it is a DIY thing, if you are capable of doing it, clean up that whole caulk line, you know, take a knife and really clean it up and re-caulk the whole bit between the tub and the tile. And that 90% of the time will take care of that problem.
Okay. That's a good fix, right?
And a good way to determine that is, I'll go in, you know, literally like put our hand with the shower and spray the walls to see if it, if the wall leaks. Because we'll first run water in the drain And if that doesn't work, then we'll spray it on the walls. And then if I don't have a personal shower. So yeah, that's something. And surprisingly, it's higher than, you know, more likely than not, but it's that caulk line.
Well, that seems like an easy fix, right?
Yeah, it can be. That's a DIY project. So if you do that first before you call a plumber out, just in case. I mean, there's a good chance that it's that, and it may just solve the problem.
Problem solved right there. Okay.
I see it all the time.
Okay. So here, my toilet is running due to high water pressure. What do I do?
Yeah. So your toilet is running because of high water pressure. If it is indeed because of high water pressure.
Well, let's say I know that for a fact. Yeah. I don't. So let's say I did.
So our plumbing system inside our house is designed to work between 40 and 80 PSI. The municipality or the water department in our area, Santa Nevada County Irrigation District, is required to get us water to the house. Nothing in there says it has to be at a working pressure. It can be too high or it can be too low. That's up to the homeowner to mitigate. So if it's too low, we put a pressure vessel in a pressure tank and we pump up the water pressure. Doesn't happen very often, but it does. Primarily, we're dealing with high water pressure, so in excess of 80 PSI. So we want to bring that pressure down. We want typically, we want our water pressure to be about 60, 65 PSI. So put a PRV in, a new PRV, and replace the fill valve, and it should solve the problem.
A PRV would be a pressure release valve?
Pressure reducing valve.
Okay. Well, I was close. Okay. So yeah. PRV. Sounds so snazzy. Okay,
pressure reducing valve. And it is one of those things that has a rubber diaphragm in there that opens to allow water in, and once the water pressure on the other side is equal to what it's set, it shuts the water off from the city. And so that rubber diaphragm will actually wear out because of chlorine. So eventually it does. It's a serviceable item that lasts 10, 15, sometimes 20 years, but they wear out.
Okay. All right. So
yeah, it looks like we got time for at least one
more.
Maybe two more. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go with, how do I get a snake down a tub drain? Because those snakes seem like they're not going to work with that. Yeah. Right?
So in a tub drain, if you're looking at the bottom of the drain in the tub, you have a 90 degree bend right at the bottom of that chute. And then it goes over to what's called the waste and overflow, that little cap that's on the top inside the tub, where if we overflow the tub, water goes down. Then that's a T. And then it's got to go a 90 degree bend down from there. And then it's got to go through the P trap. So you've got 180 degrees right within like 6 inches of each other. And then 180 plus another 90. So what we do is we pull the overflow cap off, or the overflow cover. There's usually one to two screws on that thing.
Yep.
You unscrew the overflow, remove that, and then you run your tub snake and it's actually, we use a snake specifically for a tub because there are such tight radius turns in there. You have to use a very flexible cable, like a quarter inch, that can actually work its way through that drain line. And now once we've done that, we've eliminated 180 degrees of bends. So now all we've got to do is deal with getting through the P-trap and then the CMT, which is another 90 degree. So there is cables don't like, they want to stay straight. They don't want to go through all these different angles. So if we can eliminate as many of the bends as possible, the easier it is going to be to clear out the drain. So pull the waste or the overflow cover and run it right down that.
So
and that's our show.
Okay.
That's
who do we call?
So hopefully some of this stuff helped. Hopefully it was entertaining. That tub one's a good one. Cause if you do have to clear a tub,
it really
I've
is.
Seen a lot of people struggle with it. And then we come in and we're like, how did you do that?
Magic.
We've done it 100 times. So yeah, it's kind of like the garage door. Probably could have figured my thing out and you would have been done in half an hour as opposed to
digress.
6 hours.
Don't digress.
Where can you call if you want to get a licensed plumber to come out and help fix your plumbing problems or electrical problems or heating and air problems? You can call us at 530-230-9092. The number again, 530-230-9092. You can find us on the web at easyasabt.com or abtplumbing.com and find us on Facebook and like our page. We got a lot of good stuff on there. A lot of this stuff gets rehashed on there and it's entertaining. So with that, catch you guys next week and thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Rosalie. Now let's get that project started. You got this. We'll be back next Friday morning at 9 o'clock on KNCO News Talk 830.